Welcome to the Fastest 5 Minutes, presented by Kroll and Mooring. We are your co-hosts Peter Ayer and David Robbins, bringing you a bi-weekly summary of significant government contracts, legal and regulatory developments that no government contracts lawyer or executive should be without. And we start first with cybersecurity news. On January 21st, Ellen Lord, who's the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Sustainment, issued a memo, and this memo is getting a lot of attention. In essence, it directs DCMA to leverage its review of a contractor's purchasing system to verify compliance with the various flow-down requirements of DFARS 252-204-7012. That's the safeguarding CDI and cyber incident reporting clause that went into effect in December of 2017. Specifically, the memo directs DCMA to direct contractor procedures to ensure that Tier 1 level suppliers are receiving properly marked CDI or covered defense information or instructions on how to do so. And it also demands that DCMA look at whether those contractors are assessing compliance of Tier 1 level suppliers with both the clause and NIST Special Publication 800-171, which is protecting controlled unclassified information in non-federal systems and organizations, which contractors subject to the safeguarding clause are required to implement. So this is a big development. It essentially takes this requirement to the next level, where up until this point, contractors were focused on compliance, developing their security plans, their POAMs. Now this is the government saying, we're going to be coming in to audit and look at compliance. So a big step, and it comes as part of the last couple of weeks where there's been headlines every day about cybersecurity for government contractors. We saw, for example, certain of the DoD agencies talking about enhanced procedures for supply chain where there are critical programs at issue. So this just continues to be top of mind for government contractors as we think about, you know, key issues, trends, and considerations. David, over to you.
And there's no doubt we're going to see more on the same front. We've been talking about this podcast after podcast. Obviously, we follow it, so do our colleagues here. And it seemed to be inevitable, right, that the government would come back through and check. So now we know how it's going to happen. And everybody gets how important this is. But now there's teeth, right? Now there's, for lack of a better phrase, an enforcement and audit mechanism to it.
That's right.
So it's exactly. Big news.
Exactly.
All right. Well, this one's a lot shorter than that description, but still important news. The GSA amended its regulations to adopt the SBA's version of mentor-protege programs, the broader definition and everything else. So that will now apply to GSA. And as Peter and I joked in advance, you know, news at 11, right? But that's the headline. That's all there is. And it's important for those of you doing work for GSA. Moving on to False Claims Act news. Deputy Associate Attorney General Stephen Cox delivered a speech late last month, 28th of January, that reviewed several of DOJ's False Claims Act enforcement policies. Among other things, the speech provided insight into the circumstances in which a sub-regulatory agency guidance can lead to False Claims Act liability following the Brand Memo, which DOJ issued in January of last year and incorporated into the Justice Manual in December of last year. Mr. Cox explained that noncompliance with a particular guidance document, that's the sub-regulatory agency guidance document, right, could provide grounds for False Claims Act liability if it is expressly incorporated into a contract or a certification. As an example, he added, if a party and the government agree in a contract that compliance with some specified guidance document is required, the guidance document will be contractually binding on the party, and noncompliance will be relevant under principles of contract law. The speech also emphasized steps that the DOJ has taken to encourage cooperation with False Claims Act investigations. Following the DOJ's announcement in November of last year, it would make cooperation credit available on a sliding scale. Mr. Cox offered a similar perspective, stating that DOJ has provided clarity on the rewards of cooperation in the criminal context, but retains significant discretion in the civil context, adding that stakeholders should stay tuned on this front. And we're watching this particularly closely because this is a real challenge in False Claims Act cases. We all have the discussions with our clients. What does cooperation get us? We all know cooperation is important. What does it get us, and what do we have to do to get there? And right now, you're dealing with general principles. It's hard to get a little more concrete. Now, obviously, the vast majority, in fact, the overwhelming majority of contractors want to cooperate full stop because that's in the DNA of this supply base. But a little more clarity won't be a bad thing, and it's something we're looking forward to. And I guess that's all for this edition. We'll see you again in 2 weeks. In the meantime, if you need anything, I'm at 202-624-2627, and Peter, 202-624-2807.
The Fastest 5 Minutes podcast is brought to you by Kroll & Mooring LLP. Subscribe on iTunes, and if you enjoy our show, please leave us a review. You can find more information at kroll.com/govconpodcast.